You're listening to the Island Health Podcast from Mount Desert Island Hospital. With Molly Moon, my name is Justin Starbert. We're coming to you from beautiful Bar Harbor, Maine, giving you tips on wellness, community, and service to help you live a more healthy life. Welcome back to Island Health. My name is Justin Starbert, and as always, I am co-hosted with Molly Moon. Molly, nice to see you. Today we're on Zoom.
Hey, Justin.
So glad to have you. Today I'm pretty excited because I'll let you introduce him, but this is our first return guest for season two that we had in season one. So back by popular demand, who is our guest today?
Today we have Dr. Mark Candich. So he specializes in family medicine. His medical interests include orthopedic and sports medicine. And he is certified in regenerative injection therapies, including platelet-rich plasma therapy and prolotherapy. A lot of language right there.
Indeed. That was the topic of our conversation in season one. We actually made a two-part series out of that. So without further ado, Mark, Dr. Candich, thanks for joining us today.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the opportunity.
We're thrilled to have you. So, Dr. Candich, let's start off with an introduction, if you will. Tell us a little bit about, your philosophy and journey to MDI Hospital and to the island.
Well, of course, I grew up in Bar Harbor. And, my parents, well, my father worked at the Jackson Lab for his whole career. That's why I live here. When I went to medical school, it was a bit of a change of plan. I originally was thinking I was going to go into basic science, but then, changed my mind because I seemed to enjoy the personal contact part more than the statistics and that sort of thing. And I think I would have been better at it. And I all along planned to go into some kind of primary care if I could possibly do it back here in Bar Harbor. And so I've actually had my practice here since the early 1980s and been part of the hospital organization, over 20 years now. I'm sure it's over 20 years. I work at one of the clinics called the Cadillac Family Practice, which is right off the hospital campus, where I have several excellent colleagues, both a physician and nurse practitioner and PA. And so we have a full service clinic there. As you mentioned, Justin, in the later stages of my career, I'm tending to focus a little more on the orthopedic medicine, regenerative injection part of my practice, but I still love the general primary care practice as well. I just, want to make sure I have time for the other things at this point. But, it's really in this career path that I've been really lucky enough to have has been incredibly satisfying. That is by which I mean, I've been able to stay in the same community for pretty much my entire career. And so I've known many of my patients from the time they were born all the way through when they've had their own kids probably even a couple of grandkids, I don't know, but at least kids. So multi-generational relationship with patients, families, which is incredibly rewarding. You really can't get that in almost any other field of medicine that I can think of. That's incredibly fun. I'm also the health center's medical director, so I have partly an administrative hat that I wear, so to speak. So I interview a lot of potential new doctors and other clinicians that we are recruiting into our program. And whenever I do that, I find I go over in my mind how this organization and really this community, which is really heavily tied into the organization, how it just is exceptional in a lot of ways as an organization to be part of. And by as this applies to clinicians, it's, I mean, I've been fortunate enough to have the organization really support all these kind of a little bit out of the mainstream types of professional endeavors I've wanted to get involved with, including those regenerative injections. You know, for example, we're one of the very few hospitals that actually has official clinical privileges for prolotherapy and platelet-rich plasma, especially by primary care. I mean, right. If you think about it, there are other ones, big hospitals who have those privileges, but I think they're mostly used by the orthopedists and by the rehab medicine people. You know, so
we're fair about it in professionals, right? The sports professionals and others that, you know, go to renowned locations for that. And so you're right, it does seem more like a specialty versus something that's here so unique where it's offered to the general public.
That's right. And it's the degree of support that the organization has given me in trying to create all of that, the whole program, which we created basically from scratch here. And I'm not the, I mean, there's been plenty of other of my colleagues who've had interests like this. I mean, my colleague, Katie Gassman, for example, is a family doctor who is fully credentialed and trained to do cesarean section surgery, which is, you know, major surgery. And, you know, that takes a commitment from the whole organization, as well as from the doctor herself to want to do it. So
let me ask you, you know, you bring up an interesting point where you've been fortunate to have your career really in one community and been afforded the opportunity to, you know, spread your wings while not having to leave. Right. I mean, and that doesn't really happen. You know, you hear about, you know, you used the word, the phrase twilight of your career. So I wasn't going to say that, you know, so I'll, where you mentioned that, where you're getting there, but you now wear an administrative hat and you're interviewing, you know, folks that, you know, could have been you decades ago and that are looking for an opportunity now. Do you think that, you know, the way our structure is set up, the way the island is today, that there's a chance that the new doctors, new folks coming in will actually be able to do that still? Because, you know, you think about, doctors coming out of school or getting off of their first rotations and, you know, they're almost expecting to have to jump from job to job. So that's like kind of part of your career path is that you move from one location to another to advance. But what you're saying is that, you know, as you interview these people, you're noticing that, you know, there's a chance that they actually could stick around and still have that same afforded opportunity that they might not, or they might have to get going to a big city or a big hospital.
Right. Well, just first of all, I kind of like to say, maybe rather than twilight of my career, how about maybe we could say like culmination or
so in the culmination of your career, as you sit there and you're now given the opportunity to speak with these young people that are, and I say young people, we're all young at heart, right? That's the whole point of this, is that we're getting the opportunity to, you know, learn new things all the time. So I feel, you know, like I'm just out of school sometimes, but with that, you know, what is it like talking to them and hearing their goals and ambitions and then saying, hey, well, that matched up with what I did. And actually we still have those types of opportunities here.
Right. Well, you know, when I started in practice, I was only 26 and I had a couple of, I worked at first at the Bucksport Regional Health Center, and there were these two older docs there who were completely different from each other, you know, Bill Davis and Miriam Devlin. And they were, they were kind of mentors and welcoming for me. And I really enjoyed that. It was a great start to my career. But to your point, when we are recruiting people, I mean, we take into account we do ask people like what their long range goals are. And I think, just as you say, a lot of doctors who are coming out of training probably do have in mind the idea that they may not necessarily stay in the same location for their entire career or even for a lot of years in a row. That would not be a deal breaker for a new clinician to be recruited into our system, because I think that, you know, everybody has their own career goals. And we, you know, as I said, I think MDI is pretty supportive for people who have a lot of different kinds of career goals in mind. But I do think it's valuable to people to hear about basically just the joy of being able to become an integral part of a specific community and stick with it. And I think that actually is not something that you can do if you just come in and stay for a year or two, because it takes a lot longer than that. I mean, you can, even if somebody that did come in and only stay a couple of years, it would still be, could still be a tremendous value, because some of those people are really sharp and really motivated, and they, you know, they bring a lot to the, you know, to the organization and to the community in terms of their expertise. But I think what your point it seems to be, and I completely agree, is that I don't think that I think there's so much kind of expectation that young doctors are going to have to hop around from place to place, or that this is the way life will have to be, or usually is, that to some extent they might be expecting that that's what's going to happen. Yeah. And it's probably nice for them to see that there is another way, and that it is very rewarding in its own way. You know, maybe not, perhaps not as rewarding in terms of money. I mean, right. You know, it's entirely possible somebody might, you know, get a start in a small town and then move to a much more lucrative position somewhere else. And that's, there's nothing wrong with that, but there are other benefits that you can't achieve that only come really with being able to really be deeply a part of the community. I don't mean that you have to grow up here either, because I had that.
No, of course.
You know, I did have that benefit. So I actually know a lot of patients that I still meet in my office that I actually knew when I was a kid. And
so, you know, I would say it's more of that comfort, right? So you have that comfort to get to know the community. And I gotta believe that with that comfort comes an opportunity to really strengthen your philosophy of care too. Because as you get more comfortable with the people that you're seeing and develop a rapport with them, and then, you know, here you have the opportunity to continue to be challenged professionally as well. And to your point, you might not be as lucratively compensated as somewhere in New York City, for example. But, you know, if you're looking for quality of life, certainly this is a place, you know, you can't do much worse, right? I mean, or much better than this, rather.
Funny, it sounds almost like an open letter to the next wave of doctors
right,
coming.
Right. Yeah.
That you're sharing. It's like Dr. Mark Candich's open letter to doctors. But no, similarly, actually, what would you say to new patients? Because you've sort of been speaking to the new doctors that could come to this area, but what about new patients? What would you say would be sort of, like Justin was just saying, the care philosophy that you would share with them with your expertise on so many different platforms here, just in this one rural area of Maine?
Well, you know, that's a great question, because, you know, Mount Desert Island Hospital I'm going to put that a slightly different way. MDI Hospital has organizational philosophy that we discuss regularly at our strategic planning meetings and at other occasions. And we do have a real deep commitment to what we call patient-centered care. And we didn't make up the term. That's part of sort of the philosophy of, that's also part of this concept called the medical home.
Can you explain that more for anyone who is not familiar with that term?
Sure. It can be defined in different ways depending on who's doing the definition. But basically what it's an affirmation of the notion that clinics or a doctor's office or an organization as a whole needs to act as a team. You know, we emphasizes teamwork, emphasizes participation by the patient, and it emphasizes continuity. And so we try when we say patient-centered, we mean that what we're trying to do is involve the patient's own needs, their expectations, their own philosophy, belief system into how we interact with them. And so when, to the extent that we can, we are functioning collaboratively with our patients so that, you know, we don't just tell somebody, do this and, you know, you'll be fine. Call me if 2 weeks, you know, whatever. You know, we actually would be more likely to, or we endeavor to take into account what the patient is, their expectations are, what their needs are, so that to the extent we can do it within, you know, within standards of care, we try to involve the patient in decision making, you know, medical decision making at every level. And it's not a protocol that we, at certain point, we ask somebody what they think or whatever. It's an understanding, or basically kind of a philosophy. So a medical home embodies that type of patient-centeredness. And it also, we also try to have a team approach, meaning that the patient not only has a relationship with their primary care physician, but probably also with, or if necessary, with a social worker or a care manager or, various other physical therapists, you know, they're a dietitian. You know, we have a team which has the difference between an organization that would not be organized along those lines and what we're trying to do mainly resides in the kind of communicative links that we have between all these different people. Like we value linkages between like the doctor and the...
Well, not only do the patients benefit from that model, but as do the providers. I actually just interviewed a couple of our tough students that have been here for a 9-month long rotation, and they capitalized on that part of their rotation here, is the interconnectedness between working with the providers for the patient-centered care.
So let me ask you, as you like, you know, you talk to the tough students, Molly, and then, you know, Dr. Kanich, as you're interacting with the team on all different facets, you know, here we are February, March, April, we're a year after the world changed, right? Like how has, you know, we were talking offline before about how, you know, some of this team approach has actually been really challenging for you to implement and do because of the restrictions, necessary restrictions, don't get me wrong, but, you know, restrictions nonetheless, you know, related to COVID and, you know, how have you adapted and I guess, what are you seeing next as, you know, not just the frontline workers and folks like yourselves, that, you know, get vaccinated, but the rest of the community?
Well, you know, just as you say, the whole world's been in the grip of coronavirus now for just about a year. And I think we had our first test for it was right around a year ago, just like this last week. And it's been a massive change. You know, in fact, I'd go so far as to say, from the medical provider's point of view, we've had to make less changes than the average person has. Like, because we still go to work. We didn't miss any work here. We just kept on going. The only difference was we had to change our routines and wear masks all the time. It was, you know, but that's not that much of a change compared to, for example, if you have no more business and you have to, you know, give up your house or your fishing boat or whatever it may be. You know, so we understand that we're making changes in our routine, but other people are making drastic life adjustments because of the coronavirus. And we're, you know, our program, we've made a lot of changes in how we treat people, you know, which are all intended to help prevent the spread of coronavirus. You know, I mean, we have not allowed visitors, you know, we've had people not use the waiting room. We've had a lot of screening procedures to make sure that that people who are actively, you know, who are probably might be contagious are not exposing other patients or healthcare workers to coronavirus during this time. So it's a lot of changes of our routine have been required. And the one of the things that has concerned me about that is that those changes, like the net effect of all of those has been to diminish and distance the amount of interpersonal contact that we have, even just the wearing of the mask and the not allowing visitors into the room and the, you know, this kind of thing, and sending some of our patients who may appear to be contagious to other clinics or to the coronavirus tent, or that, you know, that's a good thing in terms of keeping the community safe, but it's not necessarily a good thing from the point of view of the patient-centered experience or the, you know, the ability of people to feel nurtured and comfortable in the medical setting. And so I think people don't necessarily, you know, people in the general public, it's not their job to know all this stuff. And so many times I'm concerned that having to make all these changes is confusing or is a negative experience for people, on top of the fact that they're already stressed out because of the coronavirus epidemic. And so what we're trying to do is, number one, to make it as clear to people why all this stuff was necessary and still is necessary, and also to look towards the next step, which is already really begun in the form of vaccinations. And we're making a big push towards that organizationally and with quite a bit of success so far. And you know, we've looked to do things the right way in the organization, to follow all the CDC guidelines and other guidelines. That's been a priority. And then we've also really tried hard to adapt all this stuff in a way that works for, you know, for the community and works as a way to actually get people treated effectively and, you know, while still trying to maintain all these challenging restrictions. And it's required a lot of adaptability. And I have to say that I'm very proud of how the organization as a whole and individuals in our team, you know, have actually been managed to handle all that with a minimum amount of, I mean, it's been stressful, but everybody's been very collegial and we've made it happen in a way that I'm happy with.
Well, I think a lot of credit goes to you as well, because the tough students, actually, they reported excellent experiences here. They said that they were in Portland for a short while and then they came up here, and the difference was extraordinary. And I think part of that is because of the administration efforts from folks like you. We have one of our top MDs as also the medical director at CFP, able to work with the students and transcend all the levels of care that way. You know, like you are able to bring your insight to all the levels and impact all the folks that are on the teams. It has me thinking that not only did they get such a rich experience out of this hospital, I was thrilled that they had such great things to say, but they were also saying that the patients had such wonderful experiences through COVID, despite the fear, despite the panic and the nervousness, the worry of, you know, if I need to obtain care, like, do I even go to the hospital? Is it even safe for me to go near a hospital? Should I go near MDI hospital? It sounded to me from their perspective, like there was a lot of security that had been given to patients. But I'm curious to hear from you, Dr. Kandich, what would your message be to patients and community members who need to obtain care and maybe are still nervous to come into the hospital?
Well, my message would be that we're kind of all in this together. You know, this is not something that any of us have, you know, lived through in our professional lives, and you know, through a worldwide pandemic like this. It's kind of something that we're feeling our way together through it, and we really appreciate that the community is, the people of the community are taking a lot of responsibility for helping keep each other safe. You know, if you look downtown, that most people on the street have masks on, you know, which is fantastic, you know, because there are communities where you don't really see that, I think.
And we have the mask in mailboxes all around Bar Harbor. For anyone that's not familiar with those, there are mailboxes filled with masks around the town.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I mean, the masks are just, they're kind of emblematic, but it's actually a lot wider than that. It's a mindset. And I think part of that, what I would just ask people to, or sort of implore people to do when they're looking to get their medical care here, would be, first of all, to sort of be as understanding as you can about the fact that things are going to move a little slower. You know, they're going to be a little less warm and fuzzy, a little less personal. Maybe there may be more of the visits may be remote on the telephone or the video.
Do you think those are still just as effective, even if they're remote visits?
Well, that's a great question. I think that it can be for some types of services and it is not for others. In other words, it's, you know, there's certain things that certain kinds of appointments, you know, many, like for example, a lot of mental health appointments or certain chronic disease follow-up appointments, I think are just as good when they're done remote, and they can, you know, I expect that to some extent that type of technology is not going to just go back to, it's not going to fade away at the end of the pandemic. So, because in certain cases, it's actually convenient for, like, let's say somebody who has trouble getting out of the house and coming into the clinic, or it's hard for them to do. They're not very mobile, for example. And, you know, I would expect that telemedicine may remain in our, it is going to remain in our bag of tricks, and it'll be because it actually works better than making people come to the office for certain types of problems. And then I think for other types of situations, it is not as good, and that to the extent that we can return to office-based visits as much as we can and as safely when we could do that without endangering people, then that's what we want to do, because it is a better experience, and I think it's more conducive to accuracy of diagnosis and that sort of thing as well in a lot of cases. But it totally depends on why somebody's coming in, what they're coming in for, You know, I think our message has got to be that we're working together with them on trying to maintain their health and deal with their health issues, and yet not endanger the community because of the pandemic. And also I would emphasize it's temporary. This is, you know, we're going to see the end of this pandemic. You know, that doesn't mean that there will be no coronavirus in 2 years, because there will be, but the pandemic will be past, and we'll have ways to sort of gradually wind down a lot of the more severe restrictive measures that we've had to take.
So with all that, you know, let's bring it full circle, just like we did in season one. You know, tell us about a success story where, you know, despite the restrictions and despite the challenges of you know, what you needed to follow, you know, you were able to see a patient, you know, via some of the new methods and see success, you know, from what you're able to, you know, diagnose and accomplish.
Sure.
Because that's the fun part, right? We want to talk. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's all not that's doom and gloom, but, you know, I mean, hey, we all know the challenges we're in every day, and it's not fun. But, you know, there have also been some real successes, not just here on the island, but, you know, you read about, fortunately, there's like good news.
Nationally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I can think of one of my patients is like very elderly woman who doesn't live close by, and she's one of these people who it isn't the easiest thing in the world for her to come in. She has to get a ride, and, you know, it's especially difficult when the weather's cold, because of a long icy driveway and all this stuff, the usual things you might expect. Anyway, this particular person actually did during this past year have two or three acute medical complications happened for her. And so the way we handled it was that we used a combination of approaches. Like, for example, she made a lot of the arrangements, because she doesn't need help on everything, but she's a very sharp person. And she got into the office with help when she needed to have some hands-on appointments, and that was done with a lot of care. You know, we, for example, we didn't have anybody else in the waiting room. We had people meet her at the door and take her down the hallway and into the exam room without contacting any other patients, and dealt with the, you know, acute stabilization stuff as we normally would, just exactly the same way. And then after she went back home, we had the care team was involved, and she ended up getting some people to assist her in the house through hospice, and has successfully, you know, really stabilized herself. And we, and a lot of the follow-up visits between those times did not require her to come all the way in from her home, which is off island. And instead we arranged made a lot of those things done through telehealth. And it was contacts by phone with the patient, and also with some of her caregivers who transmitted, like, you know, vital sign and weight information and all that stuff to us. And we feel like this was, you know, she received just as good treatment despite the pandemic as she would have if there were no pandemic. It just was, you know, it required a little more, you know, a little more time to get stuff done. And we're not seeing as many patients in a day, because we don't use our waiting rooms much. And we're slower, a little bit slower, pardon me. And we can't see people's faces as much because they've got masks on, but essentially it was the same treatment that she normally would have received. And that's
such a great story.
Yeah. And the other thing,
that's what you want to hear too these days. You want to hear that people can still get the same level of treatment that they would otherwise receive.
Right. They can. And your point about people worrying about actually coming to the office or the hospital, that's a big worry. I mean, people do worry about that. I think they're not as worried about it now as they were a few months ago. Because it was such a new thing, and there were lots of horror stories out there on the news. But I'm certainly hoping that people have concluded from seeing how we do things and hearing our explanation for the reasons for these things, like the masks and the no visitors policy and that sort of thing. I think people have ultimately concluded that their risk of actually getting coronavirus by coming to the office or going to the emergency room is very, very small, and that it should not be.
Well, it's the safest place around, ultimately, as I found.
Yeah, well, we don't want to have people scared to come in, because, like, you know, that was a worry that we took into account. Like, would people be so afraid of contagion that they would ignore dangerous symptoms?
Which is a good, I mean, to be fair, that's a fair concern. However, what I've noticed just with, you know, being around the hospital and being in the department that I'm in and getting to visit with the clinics, everyone is taking all of the safety precautions, all of the necessary ones and all of the advised ones. All the staff is 110% covered. They're being safe, they're distanced, whole nine yards.
Yeah, we take it seriously. Yeah. And we think that as as people get a more of a realistic idea of what coronavirus actually is and what the pandemic actually is, I think people are starting or have already understood that, for the most part, that this is really the way to do it, and that they can still get their treatment safely and appropriately in the clinics or at the hospital without worrying about getting sick from doing it, because, you know, we really have taken this stuff seriously, and there's a lot of thought has gone into it, and the team has kind of swung it to action. You know, all the different members of the team, from the pharmacist to the people that are in charge of engineering, you know, and the administration for that matter, you know,
and IT with all of the remote platforms.
Definitely IT.
Well, I mean, it's refreshing to hear, you know, success and positivity coming out of it too. I think your point about, you know, some of these elements are going to stay intact, and you know, with any challenge or roadblock, you know, innovation is required. And to know and hear how the hospital has faced it, you know, with administration on down, right? I mean, you know, and now with Christy coming in as well, you have a fresh set of eyes as well to come at it from a whole nother perspective, and even, you know, more transparency and communication outwardly. And so, you know, I look at it and am thankful to be a part of the community in the way that I am, and have these opportunities at my fingertips, if you will, or on the phone, or to still come into person and see you know, our talented staff in whatever capacity is necessary. And so, you know, with that, you know, I know I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful for your leadership, your vision of where we're going next, and certainly the calm that you bring to this, to not just assure the staff around you and the folks that look up to you, but also the patients. And being able to share your vision and how you've approached it, and also, you know, tell people that are potentially coming to the island whether it be this summer or potential recruits, that this is a great place to be. And so, you know, with that, so thankful to have you as our first returning guest to season two this year. So Dr. Candace, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
You're entirely welcome. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Good deal.
Yeah, thank you again.
Yeah. If you're listening to the latest episode of Island Health, to Molly, on behalf of Molly Moon, Dr. Candace, thank you very much. Until next time.
This has been the latest episode of the Island Health Podcast. On behalf of my co-host, Molly Moon, thank you for listening. As always, to listen to other episodes of Island Health, go to mdihospital.org and scroll over the About Us tab on the menu. Until next time, my name is Justin Starbird. Be well.